The next item, please, if you could read the next two items together, please.
Item 158, improve land use and other city regulations through the Regulatory Improvement Code Amendment Package 8, Technical Amendments. And 159, improve city tree regulations through the Regulatory Improvement Code Amendment Package 8, Technical Amendments.
Now, with the forbearance of my colleagues, here's how I'd like to proceed on this. Commissioner Udaly has an amendment. She is obviously not able to be here this afternoon to introduce that amendment. I've got some Bureau amendments. Commissioner Saltzman has an amendment, I understand. Commissioner Fritz has a potential amendment to that amendment. So here's what I would propose we do. We could continue this, but I think that's a bad idea since we have a lot of people here prepared to testify. So let's put all of the amendments on the table. We'll get seconds for those amendments. We'll ask somebody from Commissioner Udaly's team to read or explain her amendment. Then all the amendments will be on the table prior to the planned testimony, so people will be able to testify with those amendments in mind. We'll be able to take some public testimony with those amendments in mind. And then next week, we'll actually vote on the amendments, if that's...
And that would be after the staff's presentation.
That is correct. Yes. Yeah, that's great. So why don't we go ahead and put the amendments on the table up front prior to the staff presentation, or would you prefer colleagues to do it after?
I think it would be better afterwards because the public at home might not know what we're talking about.
Okay. Does that square with you, Commissioner, as well? Very good. So let me first start off by saying this is a first reading of the Regulatory Improvement Code Amendment Package 8, otherwise known as Recap 8. This hearing is for legislative action to amend the zoning and tree codes. Staff is going to present the Planning and Sustainability Commission and Urban Forestry's recommendation, and then we'll hear testimony from community members. The council will then deliberate, and as I said, we probably won't take formal action until next week. I'd like to thank the Bureau of Planning and Sustainability and the Bureau of Development Services for bringing this project forward and all of the groundwork that went into making this possible today. And so without further ado, I'll turn the hearing over to both Joe Zender and Paul Scarlett. And I'll let you guys do your own introductions.
Good afternoon, commissioners. I'm Joe Zender, Chief Planner with the Bureau of Planning and Sustainability. And I'm filling in today for our director, Susan Anderson, who's out of town with PSU President Vivelle, presenting at a conference on the successful partnership that we've had with PSU and PSU students working on the Climate Action Plan. So you're stuck with me today. But today what we're presenting is Recap 8, as the mayor said, and this is our annual process to undertake technical changes to the zoning codes. These are changes that clarify provisions, simplify provisions, and address problems that BDS staff has at the counter as well as applicants, overall adding to the efficiency of our system. Today, this package of amendments were recommended to you by the Planning and Sustainability Commission and by the Urban Forestry Commission because this packet includes both zoning code and tree code changes. So with that, I'll turn it over to Paul Scarlett.
Thanks, Joe. Good afternoon, Mayor, Commissioners. My name is Paul Scarlett, Bureau of Development Services Director. I am pleased to be co-presenting with Joe, and this is an arrangement that's been, I'm going to go out on a limb and say for the eighth year, at least, since it's Recap 8, that we've been doing this as a partnership between Bureau of Planning and Sustainability. And this year, I also want to point out that the Parks and Recreation Bureau, particularly Urban Forestry, was part of this process as well because it's including amendments to the tree code. The couple of things that really stands out in terms of trying to improve the zoning code to allow for the development review process to go smoother, easier, and a lot more straightforward for customers and employees, it's done through this process. There's small amendments. And so we've enjoyed the arrangement to identify and participate in a collaborative way with Bureau of Planning and Sustainability staff. I want to particularly thank our staff, Kristen Cooper, who's one of the lead staff from Bureau of Development Services who has worked with staff from Bureau of Planning and Sustainability in identifying and trying and finding solutions, which goes through the process with the Sustainability Commission and so forth, and then here to Council. There are a couple of items that I'd like to call your attention to that will assist us in this time of robust development and activity where we can allow for the process to go smoother with these changes. And so, for example, we have a lot of lot subdivision, Latin division occurring. Over a two-year period of time, there's about 322. With this amendment, one of the amendments calls to straighten out the lines, more of a technical term, trying to reduce the squiggliness. And so we had about, about close to 60 of those situations. And they do create difficulty, especially in the future, trying to figure out how do you, you know, build around infrastructure and so forth. So that's one of the amendments on the as part of this report. Another item that we have been able to manage since September is we have a process interpretation which essentially says if the resources on the, if a structure is on the city's resources and it needs to be removed, it needs to be a 120-day delay. That's a practice, an interpretation. State law was, an interpretation was occurred last September. We've had a practice. Now we're codifying the practice as part of Recap 8. So that's will be a good thing. It gives folks around an opportunity to have some say about the removal requests. Another item is, and I touched on the Parks and Recreation having also play a role in there, is that since the adoption of the tree code, back in 2015, tree protection roots or roots protection of tree roots has been not very clear. And so we have an amendment here that speaks to how far from a tree where development is occurring that where there needs to be protection. Staff will go a little bit more into details with that. But I just wanted to touch on a couple of things that will make the developers our lives a lot easier because these are a lot more straightforward. They've been addressed, resolved as through this proposed changes. And overall, of course, we have been doing this for, like I said, about 8 years and look forward to that partnership. I think it works really well to identify these small changes, which then can go into effect and make the whole development review process smoother and easier. So thank you.
Thank you. So with that, Mayor, I'm going to invite up Sandra Wood and the staff team to do the presentation.
Very good. Thank you. And then after that, we're going to hear from Chris Smith from the Planning and Sustainability Commission and Mark Bailo from the Urban Forestry Commission as well. Good afternoon.
Good afternoon. My name is Sandra Wood with the Bureau of Planning and Sustainability. I am the co-development manager, and with me today is Catherine Hardinger, who is the staff planner and the Recap 8 project manager, and Jeff Cottle, who is our environmental planner and our environmental team, and worked on the Title 11 changes. And as both Joe and Paul mentioned, we're here really representing a larger team of people. So we have several people in the audience, which we might call up for questions as you're deliberating and discussing amendments and such. Just a quick refresher. Recap 8 is amending 4 city codes, so I thought I'd put a whole list of the Portland City Code up on the screen. There are 33 titles in the city code. The last one is the Planning and Zoning Code, which is Title 33. Title 11 is the Tree Code, and that's our newest city title. As you know, several years ago, we consolidated all the tree regulations into one city title, number 11. Those are the two main things we'll be amending today. Within each of the titles, it describes how those titles and regulations can be amended. In the zoning code, it describes that a staff at Bureau of Planning and Sustainability brings recommendations to the Planning and Sustainability Commission, who holds a hearing and makes a recommendation to the City Council. For Title 11, the tree code, it actually says that staff from all three of our bureaus, bring recommendations to the Urban Forestry Commission and the Planning and Sustainability Commission. Indeed, in this case, both held hearings and both have recommendations and send separate recommendations to the City Council, and both of their letters are in your documents. We are proposing amendments to Title 17, which is the Public Improvement Code, and Title 24, which is the Building Regulations Code. Both of those are not substantive, they're incidental, and they're just being made to make the other codes consistent, so language changes. So what is Recap 8? As Joe described, it's an annual amendment package to keep the zoning code current and well-functioning. It has a variety of subjects in it, but we put them all together into one project to achieve economies of scale and have one discussion with the public. The key feature of Recap is that they are minor policy amendments and technical amendments, not big, broad, brush policy decisions. As we are deciding on what the work plan is, which we do take to the Planning and Sustainability Commission for a hearing, and we did in this case also, we rank all the suggestions we've received from the public and from staff by these four criteria, one of which is a variety of stakeholders affected by the regulation. The geographic applicability, does this regulation affect every property in the city or just a few properties? What's the degree of impact? In other words, how problematic is the regulation when one can't meet it? And the regulatory improvement, like what is the potential for improving the regulation without adding complexity? So we try to be as scientific as possible when we're choosing our work plan, and that guides us to make sure that we are addressing the right issues and getting the biggest bang for our buck. Recap 8 includes many code amendments in the zoning code. We are proposing 12 minor policy amendments. That's in the blue box there. Most of them have to do with land divisions and property line adjustments, and about 15 technical and clarification items. For the tree code, we're proposing 8 minor policy amendments and 9 technical amendments. And with that, I will pass it on to Catherine to describe the public involvement process and the substance of the work. Thank you.
Thank you. Hi. So as Sandra just said before, Jeff and I are going to highlight some of the items that are actually in the recap package. But before we get to that, I just wanted to kind of review some of the public outreach we did around this project. So the public discussion draft came out in August of last year. There was a 7-week review and comment period associated with that. During that time, we met with a number of neighborhood coalitions, DRAC, the Citywide Land Use Group, and we also did commission briefings with the Historic Landmarks Commission and the Urban Forestry Commission. The proposed draft came out in November. We continued meeting with the coalitions, and then the Planning and Sustainability Commission and Urban Forestry Commission both held hearings in December. And when we're done, you'll be hearing from commissioners from both of those bodies. And the recommended draft, which we're here to talk about today, came out on January 18th of this year. So I want to go over a few items. These are in this. You may have noticed this appeared on your desk while you were in recess. So it may be easy to kind of follow along in here. So the first item I want to highlight is number 3, related to property line adjustments and regular lot lines. A property line adjustment relocates a single existing common property line between two abutting lots. So this amendment introduces new standards to encourage regularly shaped lots by requiring the adjusted line to either be straight or no more than 20% longer or shorter than the existing line. So in the example on your screen, this would no longer be allowed without an adjustment because the old line was just a straight line. The new line would be too long. The next item relates to 6 and 7 for lot and plat consolidations. This amendment really just streamlines and simplifies the lot consolidation process by allowing the creation of 3 lots in one procedure rather than requiring 3 separate procedures. So in the illustration, to go from the kind of configuration on the left to the configuration on the right, currently you would need to go through 3 lot consolidation procedures. This amendment would allow you to do that in 1. The next item is number 10, related to right-of-way dedications. This amendment really just more clearly states the existing policy that development standards, including setbacks, density and FAR, building coverage and landscaping, apply to a site after dedication of public or private right-of-way. Number 11, related to loading standards. Outside the central city, when loading spaces are required, they must generally provide forward ingress and egress from a site, even when there's no parking on site. So as you can imagine, that can take up a good amount of space dedicated exclusively to a truck being able to turn around. So we removed this requirement in central city a number of years ago, and as the city continues to get more dense, it made sense to remove the requirement outside of the central city as well. And lastly, Director Scarlett mentioned this, number 14. This amendment would require notice and a 120-day delay for the removal of ranked resources from the city's historic resource inventory. And with that, I'm going to turn it over to Jeff Cottle, who is going to be talking about some of the amendments in Title 11 related to trees.
Thank you.
Hi, so thank you for having me. So as was mentioned previously, we had 8 minor policy recommendations, changes to the Title 11 tree code. I'm just going to highlight 3 of those, one that, again, Director Scarlett had mentioned. But the first item was number 34, which is related to heritage trees. So to give a little bit of background briefly, the Heritage Tree Program was actually established in 1993. There are almost 300 trees on within the Heritage Tree Program currently, and that includes private, public, and street trees. And so it was this amendment addresses heritage trees on private property. There was a heritage tree removed from the West Hills in December of 2016 illegally. I would also say heritage trees are provided the most stringent protections within the city. It actually comes to you, the city council, for approval to be added and to be removed. So in that process, when the private tree was removed, it came to Urban Forestry's purview that the maximum they could charge was $1,000 plus a $250 administrative fee, so $1,250. And that amount is inconsistent with what exists for city and street trees, which is on a per-inch basis. So what we are proposing here is for private trees to make it consistent with what is existing for city and street trees. So the fee structure would be $300 per inch for damage to a heritage tree and $600 per inch for removal. The next couple of items are 37 and 38. We actually are, and this
I'm sorry, is the inches circumference or height?
It's DBH, so it is radius, it's diameter.
Radius.
Diameter.
Excuse diameter.
Me. Diameter
okay,
at breast
good.
Height,
thank
yes.
You.
Yes, sorry. So the next two, 37 and 38, which is we are addressing these sort of cut together, and this is one of the issues that Director Scarlett had raised. So one of the things that has been happening, the issue that has come up with at the permit counter is requirements for tree protection for any development activities at all, and including if you're doing something in the front yard and you still have to protect things in the backyard. So this is part of the tree protection is a root protection zone is identified for all existing trees that are to be preserved, which is what is the in the graphic on the right there of the slide. And so what we have done is to try to streamline that process and not require tree protection in all cases. We have identified particular activities that would not require tree protection, and those include when work is done within 10 feet of an existing structure, and as long as there are no trees to be proposed to be removed, and that work is not within the root protection zone of existing trees. If a homeowner is doing a replacement of a deck or a fence and not expanding the size of that deck or fence, it would also not require, currently it does require tree protection, so it would now no longer require that. And then we've also identified the allowance for the installation of required landscaping within the root protection zone without any kind of issue with BDS, so basically during the development review. Currently, the language was unclear related to landscaping in those zones, in the root protection zone. And then the final one is number 39. So as a part of all development, in the development situations, an applicant is required to preserve 1/3 of existing trees on the site. And so As a part of that, they prepare a tree plan that identifies which trees will be preserved and which will not, if that is the case. As a part of that tree preservation, the intent of Title 11 was to not include things that are dead, dying, dangerous, or nuisance species in that tree preservation. And the language is a little unclear on that. Those types of trees are addressed, but not specifically related to the tree plan. So to further clarify that, we have added language where when a tree inspector comes on site and they are confirming those trees that are to be preserved, if they are in any of those categories, dead, dying, dangerous, or nuisance, they will identify that, and then a tree plan revision will be required. And if the trees, if there are not alternative, healthy, non-nuisance trees available, they do have the option for fee in lieu. So those are the three that I wanted to highlight related to Title 11. And with that, we will just say that you have two ordinances, one that addresses Title 33, 17, and 24, and then another separate one that addresses Title 11. So we would recommend adoption of those ordinances along with any amendments you might have today, and then also to adopt the commentary as legislative intent.
Thank you. We appreciate it. Any further questions for this panel? Great. It's my understanding Chris Smith is here, representing the Planning and Sustainability Commission. Thank you. I'm sorry? Oh, yeah. Mark, why don't you come up now, too, as well?
I'm instead of Mark.
You're instead of Mark. Okay, very good. And both of you, as you give your testimony, obviously, if you could state your name for the record, that'd be helpful.
Good afternoon. I'm Chris Smith. I am Vice Chair of the Planning and Sustainability Commission, and I was presiding at our hearing and work session on this topic. I believe this is the first PSC recommendation that's been carried to the new council, so Mayor, let me welcome you on behalf of the PSC to your new role, including as our commissioner in charge.
Thank you.
Recap, when done well, is a relatively non-controversial topic. This year, I think it was done well. We had a minimum of public testimony. The testimony we did have was primarily around tree protections, including some desire to strengthen the protections that are in the package, and I'm sure you'll hear more about that from my colleague. We chose to amend only one area of the package as it came through us, and that had to do with the lot line adjustments and the goal to simplify those reconfigurations so that people have a better idea of what they're buying in terms of the shape of their lot. We slightly shifted the balance to allow a little more flexibility while still preserving the basic intent of that program. We had one commissioner who dissented from that view, but the package was passed by a large majority. And I'm happy to answer any questions.
Very good.
No questions? Okay, so I'll start. Good afternoon. Thank you for having me. My name is Meryl Reddish. I serve on the Urban Forestry Commission. And first, I want to thank the Bureau of Planning and Sustainability staff for helping us make this a smooth process. I think that they were very responsive to the Urban Forestry Commission's concerns, and we work very well together. We held a public hearing. It wasn't heavily attended. It was during sort of the bad weather, but we used that opportunity to really go through each and every item and look at it with kind of a fine, and we looked at it and went over it with a fine-tooth comb, so we really had a good understanding about what all of the items meant, and we really support what's in this recap proposal. There are a couple of things that I just wanted to note because I think that they're worth noting, and that is the heritage tree penalties that were increased and are now consistent with trees on private property. So we were satisfied about that. And then the other thing is the amenity bonus. We were really concerned at first that the preservation of trees were given a lower amenity bonus, and we asked for that to be increased, and that was done. So we were happy about that. There is one thing, though, that I want to bring up because I have the mic right now, and it is not part of this recap process, which you heard is just technical and small adjustments. This is something that is quite larger, and is more complex, but it's really, really important, and it's a concern of the Urban Forestry Commission and the community as I hear it. As you know, Title 11 and tree preservation standards do not apply for lots under 5,000 square feet. And so what we are seeing across the city are developers who are developing lots that are over 5,000 square feet. They have big trees, either native Doug firs or other large trees, and they divide the lot, and the lot is then under 5,000 square feet, and so that they can remove all the trees. And what we're seeing is a loss of trees and a real problem across neighborhoods. So while the RECAP program, of course, does not address something as large and complicated as that, I want to bring this to your attention because the Tree Code Advisory Committee that Commissioner Fritz convened a couple of years ago to look at the tree code included this, among other things, in their recommendations. So I hope that in the future we can do a bigger revision of the tree code and really see what is working and what is still being what we're losing as a community and a city. So thank you.
Thank you, Mel.
Great. Any further questions for either of these two?
Well, on that subject, you know, there's 41 items in this recap project. I've already got an additional 45 items for the tree code alone that we would really like to work on. So although we're doing some of the most urgent things in this process, I appreciate you bringing it up that at some point we really do need to get serious about correcting things that have worked differently from the way we thought they would.
Thank you, Commissioner.
Great. I want to thank you both for your service. This has been really important work and good work up to this point, so thank you both for that.
Thank you.
So at this point, why don't we go ahead and read into the record amendments and second them for discussion purposes. Then we can take public testimony. We won't actually vote on anything today. We'll just continue it to next week. So I'll start, if you don't mind. These are amendments that have been brought forth that were alluded to by the bureaus. The first, and you should have all received a memo with these four amendments in them, and if not, let me know and I'll make sure you get one. The first is related to item 3, regular lot lines on page 95. Remove the requirement that the adjusted property line must be at a right angle to the street, removing the unintended consequence of making property line adjustments without an adjustment incredibly difficult to do in certain areas of the city. Can I get a second?
Second.
Number 2, related to item 33, definitions, seep or spring, stream on page 113. Remove amendments to the stream definition, eliminating the language that would require that streams that are in pipes be preserved in tracts.
In
tracts. And I'm getting do you want to come up and explain
second.
That one? We have a second, so I don't need that yet. Item 3, I told you these were technical. Correct typos and formatting errors in Title 11 section of the report at the city auditor's request. And number 4, finally, and this one is not currently in the recommended draft that I'd like to introduce for consideration, I'd like to add a technical fix to Recap 8 that would implement the council's intent from last December related to inclusionary housing parking requirements. That is, waive parking requirements for projects that build affordable housing and require parking for those that pay a fee in lieu.
Second.
Second. Okay, so we have these amendments on the table. They have been seconded for the purpose of discussion. Commissioner Saltzman?
So your last amendment, let me just create, that was a restatement of what we did?
That is correct. It is an inclusion of what you did. So it makes it consistent with the inclusionary housing parking requirements.
Okay. And I concur with that.
Yeah, okay. So I've... an amendment. I think your offices have all received copies, but I'll give you out then, just in case. And I'd like to thank Commissioner Fritz for her suggestion to clarify this amendment. For the record, this amendment applies to circumstances where a proposed development triggers the dedication of additional public right-of-way, for example, the widening of a street or a sidewalk. The purpose of the amendment would be to calculate the floor area ratio based on the site area as it exists before the additional right-of-way is dedicated at the time of a building permit application. Calculating the floor area ratio after the dedication results in reduced development capacity, and in the case of residential development, can limit the number of housing units, whether market or affordable. I'd also like to thank Damian Hall for bringing this issue to my attention over the years, or over at least the last year or two. So that is what this amendment does.
Second. And second. Commissioner Saltzman already incorporated my suggestion, so it doesn't need to be amended.
Okay, great. So we now have Wheeler amendments. We have Saltzman amendments. Commissioner Udaly had an amendment. I don't know if somebody from her team wanted to read that. I'd be happy to read it into the record and get a second for discussion purposes. But at a minimum, it'd be great if somebody could come up and explain it to us. And I'll either introduce it or not at your discretion.
Hi, it's Marshall Runkle from Commissioner Udaly's team. Thank you, Mayor, members of the council. The amendment that Commissioner Udaly's office would like to offer came up in the context of one of the great things about this job is helping community partners through the development review process. So that this error came to light in the looking at the requirements for a project in the Cully neighborhood. It's the Living Cully Plaza, which was formerly the Sugar Shack, one of the biggest blights in our city, in my opinion. If you look, this amendment would just adjust the requirements that are included in a table so that the requirements in design districts with a D overlay would match exactly what the requirements are in other design districts in the city. So if you look at the whole table, the criteria is consistent in all of the other design districts in the city. And because of a scrivening error in translating the table from one format to another, it just wasn't translated into the D design overlay area. So I think that this is clearly consistent with the idea of RECAP, where we're spotting and correcting errors. I don't believe that there's any policy issues. That this is just a correcting a scrivening error.
So I'll second that for discussion.
Is that okay if we go ahead and put this in the record?
Yes, please do.
Daily amendment?
I do have a question about it, though.
Great.
I'm surprised to hear there's a D overlay in Cully.
I'm not familiar with the
zoning
map.
That might be a question for staff, but more particularly, as Commissioner Udaly has drawn our attention to this particular table, I see that it's got design overlay zones for Type 2 and Type 3, and the cutoff is whether the project costs $2,188,650. And my question to staff is, how on earth did we arrive at that number? And is it still the right number? So that would be something I'd like to get some more information about later.
Okay. Any further questions for me?
Thank you very much.
Right. Did well. Thank you, sir. We appreciate it. Good. So we now have...
I think formally, did you offer the amendment there?
I'm offering it on behalf of Commissioner Udaly. Commissioner Fritz has seconded it for discussion purposes. So we now have all of our amendments on the table.
No, actually, I have one.
I apologize, Commissioner.
And I apologize to staff. I only just noticed this, and I've only got one copy of it, so if you two could share. The rest of you. Good job, Golden.
Very good.
Excellent.
Very good.
This is part of the recap package relating to the length of terms of commissioners in 33, 7, 10, 0, 3, 0. And the existing amendments, actually, it's not quite clear from where it's been typed up. The existing amendment says that in the event a new member is unable to be appointed prior, don't look at that, it's going to be confusing. In the event that a new member is unable to be appointed prior to the expiration of an existing member's term, the term of the existing member may be extended to up to 1 year. Now, I certainly understand the challenges of filling the many boards and commissions within the Bureau of Development Services. And I knew when I was in the commissioner, I knew they were coming up. And so having the deadline, it seems unreasonable to say that there's only one person in the entire city who can be found to fill out and to continue their term. In some of our boards and commissions, particularly the Planning and Sustainability Commission, we had term limits on the Sustainability Commission. We had term limits on the Planning Commission when they were combined that then started the clock all over again. So we do have some members of the Planning and Sustainability Commission who have served for a lot longer than two terms. So there's two reasons. The amendment I'd like to propose is adding, in the event of an unexpected vacancy and a new member is unable to be appointed prior to the expiration of an existing member's term, the term of the existing member may be extended by up to 4 months rather than 1 year. So there should be a little more urgency to getting somebody new into that position. The other problem with the way it's couched right now, it puts the staggered terms perhaps to be on a more people rolling off at the same time as needing to come on. So it kind of gets out of the staggered terms that we set up with all our boards and commissions. So I'd like to move that amendment for discussion.
Great, and I'll second that for discussion purposes.
And I'll have it all typed up properly for next week, sorry.
Okay, very good. So we now have amendments on the table. We've heard the testimony. Is there public testimony?
I have a list here.
Thank you.
We have five people signed up, or four. The first three, please, coming up are Greg Everhart, Peggy Moretti, and Alan Hippolito.
Good afternoon.
I'll start. I'm Greg Everhart. I'm actually here as a Sunnyside resident, not as a Urban Forestry Commissioner or a Heritage Tree Committee member, but you could guess that that's the topic that I'm interested in. So I actually have given a short package of three sheets to you. It has sort of my outline of input, and then it has a letter I thought that was very moving and pertinent regarding the grand fir that was removed illegally. And I want to note that not only was that tree 24 inches in diameter at breast height, we were not allowed on the property to see how old it was, and the penalty was $1,000 plus the 250 fee. That's not something that discourages someone if they are bound and determined to develop a property, and that's what the Friends of Overlook Bluff were really concerned about. We have some of these private trees in particular that are in sites that it's just really tempting. And the property owners of that grand fir paid $1.8 million for their property, so possibly even this fee would not have, you know, deterred someone who could, you know, buy that much property and then perhaps subdivide it. But based on the 24 inches, it would at least have been closer to $15,000 in penalty. And I wanted to add to Jeff's comment, because they actually did have to plant some replacement trees, and that's done on an inch-for-inch basis. But they chose really small, cute, ornamental trees, and they'll never have the value that a big conifer has in terms of wildlife, stormwater, and so on. So I know that for some people they're concerned that private property owners have signed on at one deal. They have basically agreed to protect their tree. It could be perceived that now we would be punishing them if they damage or injure their tree. So the last two pages are actually the sample form that Urban Forestry staff gives to people when they're contemplating actually consenting to this designation. They may have nominated their tree, but when they see this, they realize it is actually a serious business, that they are waiving some of their rights. They're promising to care for this tree, and they're actually promising on behalf of their eventual heirs or anyone who might actually buy the property for them. So it literally says it's going to bind their all their successors, heirs, and assigns. It's unlawful for any person to remove or destroy a heritage tree, to injure, misuse, or remove any device. Sometimes trees are cabled and braced. It's already something that people are aware of. So I personally am just glad this might protect some of those 150 or so private trees from the rampant development that's really doing in a lot of our unprotected trees. That's it.
Thank you very much for your testimony. Good afternoon.
Good afternoon. I'm Peggy Moretti. I'm the Executive Director of Restore Oregon. Restore Oregon is a statewide nonprofit working to preserve, reuse, and pass forward the historic places that make our communities unique, livable, and sustainable. I'm here to endorse the codifying of the 120-day demolition delay period for properties listed on the Historic Resources Inventory. It represents a very small piece of a much larger policy strategy necessary to curb the demolition epidemic that has been chewing up Portland neighborhoods. The vast majority of demolitions are adding no real density, simply replacing modest, affordable homes with bigger, more expensive ones. An examination of demolitions by Restore Oregon in 2016 revealed that for each housing unit demolished, the replacement was just 1.3 new housing units, and almost all of them are very significantly more expensive. The proposed demolition of a 137-year-old farmhouse in the Reed neighborhood is a current example of the value of this demolition delay. That house was built in 1880 and sits on an 8,000-square-foot lot. It appears a developer plans to demo this neighborhood icon and replace it with two more expensive homes. The delay period, however, has afforded a neighbor the opportunity to attempt to purchase the property, save the house, and possibly add an ADU. In addition to demo delay, we also need better incentives for restoration and reuse. I'm just seizing the opportunity to put that plug in. And those would come in the form of tax credits, tax rebates, fee reductions, code flexibility, and expanded deconstruction requirements. The new Goal 5 rules, which Restore Oregon fought to create, need to be implemented by the city. And that should include an update of the Historic Resources Inventory, because you cannot manage what you don't know you have. And a process by which new historic districts will be able to establish design review standards through a public process that reflects the needs of that neighborhood. Portland's unique older neighborhoods and commercial corridors are under a greater threat now than at any time in the last 50 years. So as you grapple with demands for affordability, sustainability, and economic development, the members of Restore Oregon ask you to remember that the preservation and reuse of older historic buildings plays a significant role in all three of those goals. And further, it is the historic homes, neighborhoods, churches, theaters, schools, fire stations, and storefronts that make Portland authentically Portland and not a bland anyplace USA. What you do in the next year is going to determine what Portland looks like for generations to come.
Thank you. Good afternoon.
Good afternoon, members of the council, Mayor Wheeler. My name is Alan Ippolito. I work for Verde, a tax-exempt nonprofit in Northeast Portland's Calais neighborhood. Good to see you both last night at the Portland United Against Hate vigil. Thank you for your time. So I just wanted to provide a little context to this, the application with regard to Hugh Daly's proposed amendment that y'all are discussing today. So several years ago, Verde, together with Habitat for Humanity Portland Metro East and Hacienda Community Development Corporation, through what can only be called a bootstrapped operation, right? We're not deep-pocketed developers. We're able to acquire the former Sugar Shack, the block-size strip club complex that runs from basically Cully, Killingsworth, Portland Highway, purchased it from its former owners that were later received, were the subject of significant legal action for money laundering, prostitution, with the idea of one, keeping another business from coming in and buying that building and doing the same thing, which there was another purchaser kind of right on our heels, but then also turn it into a place that serves Cully children and families and reinforces Cully's identity as a diverse neighborhood in a changing Portland. The fact that this error in application or translation to this table has put a significant barrier in our way. We have a representative of our sustainable food sector at the table with us negotiating a co-development opportunity that would bring jobs, contracting, and improve the site. This is one of the real barriers to us, that somehow we find ourselves not subject to the same thresholds that apply to these other planned districts. We went through, and in a related or in a similar project at Cully Park, we went through Type 3. Type 3 is a very challenging process, especially for small community-based developers like ourselves. And so if this misapplication could be addressed, it would remove a significant barrier to our ability to return that property to a community serving use. It's not, we can always sell it. There's demand for the property, but the things we're getting are more about storage facilities and dollar stores and things that don't offer us the chance for deep community benefit. And so to the extent this error could be corrected, it could remove a challenge to our returning the property to serving community.
So is this an exemption from design review?
No, it's the design overlay, I think, is a function that came from the Cully Main Street and transportation study that happened in 2013.
I know what a design overlay is, but is the result of your amendment to remove this property from the design overlay's requirements somehow?
No, it merely, go ahead, I'm sorry, go ahead.
It's just the type of review. If it's under, they get to use the type 2 instead of type 3, which is...
So it's about the type of type 3 versus type 2?
Yeah, based on the exterior, the value of exterior improvements proposed, and that's what these thresholds apply to, that if we're equal to or under 2.188650 million, then we're in type 2, which is still review and appropriate for the circumstances, and over 2.1, et cetera, then we'd be in type 3, which is just a whole different ballgame for the type of work we're trying to do.
Okay.
Thank you very much.
I didn't mean to interrupt you, Alan.
No, that's all I had. I appreciate the time very much.
Great. Thank you. Next.
And thank you for your leadership yesterday, Alan. That was really a great event with Portland United Against Hate.
We've got some good work ahead, so I'm really glad we have a chance to do it.
Thank you.
Damian Hall is the last person who signed up.
Greetings.
Thank you. Mayor Wheeler, Commissioners Fritz and Salzman, thank you for the opportunity to speak to you today. I'm here in support of the amendment to minor adjustment item 10, which Commissioner Salzman has proposed as with the language addition from Commissioner Fritz. Just going to speak real briefly about what that amendment would do. It fixes an ambiguity in the code by clarifying that development standards are calculated after dedication. That's the current version. Here, this amendment would not include floor area ratio in that rule. Basing FAR on pre-dedication site size provides the potential for construction of more residential units in the city at all affordability levels, and especially in close-in opportunity areas where it's most needed. To be clear, this is not a major change or a departure from current policy and the status quo, because FAR and height allowances remain the same. And it's not the masterstroke that's going to solve the city's housing deficit, but it does allow for incremental progress towards some of the city's most challenging housing goals, and it also has the added benefit of not costing the city anything to implement. Finally, it, as demonstrated by the letters, which I believe were submitted to members of the council, and I have copies of those. If you haven't received those, this amendment has widespread support from both the affordable housing community and the market rate development community, and really has... it presents an opportunity to allow those communities to have another tool to try and bring more units online in the city. And unless you have any questions, that's really all that I have today.
Thank you very much. We appreciate your testimony.
We have one more.
Oh,
question.
One more.
Excuse me.
Mm-hmm.
All right. Thank you.
Good afternoon.
Good afternoon. My name is Simon. I've been a long-time Portland resident, and I've been to these type of meetings before, and there was talk about, you know, from blonde-haired lady of, you know, preserving old buildings, and then he was talking about increasing housing, and you know, I don't believe in, you know, first of all, I think we should preserve these heritage buildings. I think they're important to the heritage of Portland and to his personality. And also, but as far as increasing density, as this last gentleman mentioned, I don't believe it's really, you know, appropriate to just cram more people in the downtown area, especially if it's prime business space for store and retail and business office and so forth. You know, I think, you know, projects like what they're doing with the light rail line, where more condos are being built in the rural areas, you know, that could be served very nicely through mass transit, such as the MAX to downtown, is a much better idea, you know, and that's sort of the old concept that Portland has always had in the earlier parts of the last 20th century. So thank you very much for speaking.
Yeah, thank you for your testimony. We appreciate it. Could we have BPS come back up, please? I just want to clarify a few things. Number one, it's my understanding you're going to put the amendments on your website. Is that correct? And we're going to ask for public written testimony on those amendments?
That would work out just fine.
Okay, great. And I don't know if anybody has any further questions for the team at this point.
I don't know whether you're able to answer that question about why it's 2 million, 1.88, yeah, blah, blah, blah. Does anybody know that answer?
So there are many dollar thresholds in the zoning code, and they get automatically updated every March 1st based on the cost of construction. So the non-conforming thresholds is another example. So then the numbers start looking stranger and stranger because it's based on a percentage. So it started, I think, as a flat 2 million threshold,
yes,
and then it starts to get weird after a year.
Yeah, perhaps in recap 9, that might be looked at again, because when I saw that, oh, that was definitely for some particular exemption for one property that needed it to be exactly that.
Right.
So I'm very glad to hear that it's not that nefarious.
Right. And we're also, you're probably familiar with the design overlay zone assessment project, where we'll be here in April, April 26th, before council, with an assessment of our whole design overlay system, where it's mapped, what's working, what's not working. We just had a great session between the Planning and Sustainability Commission and the Design Commission, a joint session to make sure it's meeting our goals. So those thresholds we'll be discussing more in depth.
Terrific, thanks.
Mm-hmm.
So, but that area in Cully does actually have a D overlay?
It does. Kristen was just looking up the plan. It's from 2012. That property got an EXD overlay. The EX zone always comes with a design overlay on it. Mm-hmm. So it's a little spot.
Very good spot by Commissioner Udaly. Thank you. And mm-hmm. Appreciate the explanations.
Great. Any further questions for now? Then with that, we will continue this, both of these items 158 and 159, to 11 a.m. on Wednesday, February 22nd.
One clarification.
Yes.
You'll be taking written testimony on the amendments until next week,
That is correct. And if people want to do that, where do they go to get information on the amendments?
They can look at our website, and it's www.portlandoregon.gov/BPS/recap, and we'll have the amendments there.
And perhaps if you on the front page of planning, if you could put a direct link to it, that would be helpful,
yep,
please. But what I'm hearing us say is we're not going to be taking any more verbal testimony live next week.
That's correct. We've had our staff testimony. We've taken public testimony. We've introduced our amendments now. And so next week at the continuation, we'll begin the deliberations on those amendments in the main motion. And with that, I believe we are adjourned. Thank you, everybody.
Thank you.
Nice job. I think Kristen's absolutely right. It's a sign that's gone well when there's hardly anybody here for a land use thing. We didn't get interrupted today, though. I was quite surprised.